This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Smart Money Podcast, a series of financial tips for different life stages. Get your money right for your life. This podcast is brought to you by Discovery. I am Maya Fisher-French, and each week we chat to a money expert or experts to find the answers to those pressing financial questions. I often read articles that interview older people about what they wish they had done differently or advice to their younger selves. And every time, it includes something about wishing they had saved more and spent less. The thing is, that's very easy to say in retrospect when you've done all the spending. But how do we change our mindsets when we're still young? How do we learn to value money enough to invest in it? So in studio today, we have financial advisor Grant Wills, who's been convincing young professionals to look after their money for the last 10 years. And we also have Mavis Uriki, an international behavior specialist and author of Managing Emotions for Financial Freedom. Welcome, Grant and Mavis. Grant, let's just start off with getting a little bit personal here. Okay, you still kind of fit into the millennial range yourself. So I'm going to ask you, do you think you've got the balance right? Or are there any decisions you regret?
Well, Maya, as a young professional, I really struggled with the concept. I found myself earning a lot of money at a very young age, and this at the same time being heavily influenced with society's idea of what it means to be successful and wealthy. For example, spending money recklessly, buying expensive brands and a flashy car.
Okay, so you're kind of fitting in this kind of concept we all have of the poor millennial who's always maligned. Mavis, do you think that's true? Is that what you kind of see quite typically, this age group?
That's really typical, because the money mindset is actually developed by other people. It's developed by TV, so it's developed by what you see on social media of what success really looks like. So they haven't actually had an opportunity to self-determine and decide, what does success really look like for me? What financial values do I want to live by? And by what age do I want to be financially free? And what do I need to do in this moment so that by that age I'm actually financially free? So it's actually a self-awareness building process that they must engage in. But unfortunately, most people are not actually exposed to that. So they don't actually know they need to do
that. I hear what you're saying. It's such an interesting concept. We're allowing advertising, in a sense, to determine our value system. And, you know, I was busy listening to you thinking about probably my biggest financial regret was going off. I had a second child and we went off and bought a big house with a big mortgage and massive running costs, because I had this picture in my head of my children running around in this garden and this big family, and I had this massive picture. And the reality was that the kids actually didn't play in the garden that much. They actually hated the house because it was too big. They wanted to be near me all the time. And it was just a financial nightmare to keep going. And then I read an article by a psychologist who said we tend to spend money on pictures in our heads of what we want our life, or think, that's the word, think our lives should look like, rather than the reality of what we want. And I mean, Mavis, that's really what you're saying.
So what happens with money is that we, during our formative years, we experience what I call emotional debt. You first have financial, experience when you're young, how your parents dealt with money, or whether you asked for money and your parents said we don't have, or whether you lived in a smaller house. So it becomes a debt for you that you think, when I grow up, I'm going to have that big house. So you're now building a mental picture. That's a mental representation of your unmet need in your childhood. And that is your emotional debt. So we now begin to use money to try and pay off, or to try and meet that fantasy in our head of what it is that could possibly meet that which is unmet in our childhood.
That's really going back and being introspective about what are you trying to do with these purchases. So Grant, I mean, going back to you, you know, you spoke about the flashy car, all of this. Does this resonate with you a little bit about the emotional debt versus the financial debt? And what changed? Or has it changed?
Absolutely, Maya. So it took me some years to come to the realization that I'm not even practicing the principles of saving and investing that I've been teaching my clients about. So at one point, I woke up in a pool of debt. However, Maya, I don't regret the decisions that I've made, because it really gave me first-hand experience of how a lack of financial planning can affect you.
So you've walked, you kind of, what I'm hearing from you is that you're saying you woke up one day and realized you weren't walking the talk. Weren't walking the value system that you were imparting upon your clients.
Absolutely.
Now, Mavis, what happens when we don't live our value system?
So, very interesting. When we are out of alignment with who we are or our value system, obviously we're going to find ourselves in debt. Okay, that's a symptom. So I always say, you know, when you find yourself in debt, it's a symptom. It's feedback. It's telling you what you're not doing or that you're out of alignment with who you really are. So also even financial, your health, your personal health, we've seen lately, there's an increase in mental illnesses. There's an increase in ailments. People are financially stressed. I was speaking at a conference recently where I said financial distress is the main reason why people call them for help, which is very interesting. So people are financially stressed because they are living out of their own value system. In fact, they haven't actually consciously decided or consciously reflected on what their financial values are so that they can live them out.
And that's interesting. I mean, Grant, you spoke about that that stage of your life when you were buying things. Why? I mean, you said you realized when you were speaking to your clients that you weren't living your value system. But now, if I had to reflect back, or you have to reflect back and listening to what Mavis says, what do you see your value system as? Because we buy into the value system of the advertisers and not our own. Did you ever have a proper reflection about that?
I just realized that all of this really wasn't making me happy, and all I really wanted was financial security.
You know, it's interesting because I was reading an article recently where research showed that spending money on experiences, you know, you were talking about the fast car or the flashy clothes didn't make you happy. And apparently spending money on experiences makes us far happier than spending money on objects. But we often miscalculate the happiness value. So we think, for example, I could go on an overseas holiday, but that just lasts 2 weeks, where a couch that I buy will last me 10 years. But actually we derive more happiness from the holiday. So Mavis, maybe take us through the psychological aspect of that happiness quotient.
Okay, so our emotions determine the memories we end up with. Now, you can get a boost of buying a couch now, but things have got a faster diminishing value than experience. So with experience, your memories are actually, you know, you remember more your experiences, things that you have done with other people, connections at an emotional level. Because remember, we are head animals. We are created for connection. So your couch, you can't really
connect with a couch.
Connect with a couch.
Actually, you can connect with someone on the couch.
So you will have a memory of that someone, not of the couch. So I think emotions are really what create memories. So it's the emotional experiences. If you go on holiday, you've got more emotional experiences than buying a couch.
And you can almost draw down on those over time.
Yes.
Okay, that's
yes, and you can always replay it.
And
you
replay
can't replay it. Having your couch delivered to your house.
No, you're quite right. It's actually very true, Grant. Yeah. Travel, I mean, is that something you enjoy?
Absolutely. From a personal experience, traveling definitely has a high happiness value. I've been fortunate enough to travel to many countries around the world and experience different cultures and food, a way of living. And I believe that traveling in a way makes you richer, not monetary, but in terms of richer as a person. So traveling gives you perspective. Mm-hmm. The excitement of buying an object on the other end is short-lived. And even though the item may last a few more years, it creates no lasting memories.
Okay, so traveling's great. It's like my bucket list full of traveling stuff. But Grant, you know, if you're having to take out your credit card and you're funding all of this on loans, you know, traveling is not such a good idea. So how does one fit this in? You're a young professional. How do you fit in the experience side into your budget?
This must fall part of your financial plan. It's quite important. And this is how, you know, I fit this in.
So you'll actually put that as part of an item on your
absolutely
on your financial plan. Because, you know, one of the other things that we read about with the sort of millennials or the Generation Z and all these other names that we're giving every generation that comes along is that there's supposedly this shift away from consumerism. So they're not owning stuff, they're renting stuff. So this is the Uber economy, this is the Airbnb, music streaming. I've even read about renting clothes. Apparently you can actually literally, you know, rent like Jimmy Choo shoes and things. Mm-hmm. I mean, Grant, are you seeing this coming through? And do you believe this? Do you think this is an anti-consumerist move?
Yes. Well, my interpretation of consumerism is that it forces you into some level of commitment. So, for instance, if you were to buy a car, I'm now automatically forced into a 4-year-plus commitment where Generation Z or Z are synonymous with instant gratification and a lack of commitment. Calling an Uber, for example, doesn't take much thought and effort. And in a similar way, there's a lack of thought put into their financial decisions as well.
So you're thinking that this lack of this idea of renting is really just a complete and utter aversion to commitment, Mavis?
I really think it's an extreme side of consumerism, because there you want it. You want instant gratification. It's not as if you are evading it. You're not running away from it. You're still indulging. You still want the car. You still want the clothes, the fancy clothes. So it's not like you're stopping from doing it. For me, it's the highest level of lack of discipline. So okay. I want it now, and I want it here and now. And I don't want the commitment, and I don't want to build, because commitment is about building. So if you don't want to build, you're saying, I want it, but I don't want the discipline and the pain that comes with building.
Mm.
So for me, it's an extreme, you know.
So you're not buying into this idea that this is this wonderful idea that we rent and we move and we're flexible. You're saying, hold on, guys, you're just scared of commitment.
You are just scared of, in fact, you're scared of pain. You are scared of financial discipline.
You're scared of financial discipline. Yeah. Now, that's very, very interesting.
Because it's painful.
And I think it's what we're also seeing this is in terms of not owning property, not renting. But perhaps this also is an issue where because we're now no longer saving towards an asset.
Absolutely. So, Maya, what I see is that property definitely is a trend with the affluent market. But speaking, using myself as an example, as a young professional, it was not trendy to invest in property just yet. So I entered into the rental market, and it was until fairly recent that I came to the realization that my 7+ years of renting was actually the equivalent of being halfway halfway through my bond. And then I decided to channel my money into property as well. And now I'm building my own home. Yeah.
And I suppose even if you decide you don't really want to move into property, if you're not sure if you're going to be living there for very long, or you may need still some flexibility, but at some point you still need to be building up some assets. So whether that's investing and saving, but I think it's this idea where there's absolutely no anchor at all. It's just absolutely. It's just money coming in and money going out and feeling all very happy that you've got this flexibility, but you're actually not pinning down on those assets. We've kind of ascertained that, you know, maybe this idea of spending or renting, not owning, is not building up asset wealth. But Grant, go back, think about that younger person that you were. What do you now tell a young professional, somebody in their mid-20s, sitting in front of you? How do you get them to change their mind?
Okay, so what I find, Maya, is that generally the younger generation does not see the need to save for a rainy day. So getting my younger clients to commit to an investment or saving tends to be quite difficult. So the trend I see is that once they're married and expecting kids, then only do they realize that they've wasted so much time. And this is what I like to call, obviously, being in catch-up mode. Now, instead of investing 500 rand for 10 years, we're investing 1,000 rand for 5 years.
And if only you'd started that 5 years earlier, you could have started with the 500 rand and actually probably have more money than you would have with the 1,000. So maybe this is a psychological issue. Because your Grant here, Grant can show them the spreadsheets. It doesn't necessarily change their mind. So if we've got young people listening, what should they be thinking about? How should they be getting that mindset to change?
Okay. So for me, if you're a young person, the start of point when you earn your first salary, or before you even get to earn your first salary, determine what kind of legacy you want to leave behind. Determine your financial vision. Determine your financial freedom number. So if you
want
to be...
Sorry, just to stop here. Financial freedom number. What does that mean?
So financial freedom number is an amount of money you need to save, either in an asset-generating product, for you to be able to be free, to be able to live the life you're living now without working.
Okay.
How you calculate that financial freedom number, you can look at perhaps your monthly expenses. For us who have been working forever, you look at your monthly you look at your monthly bill, which is, for example, I'll give an example. So say your monthly bill, your monthly total expenses are 28,000. You multiply that by 12 and you divide that by 0.08. So if you were using 28,000, you'd get 4.2 million as your financial freedom number.
Okay.
What that means is that that's the amount you need to build so that you can become financially free. So if you didn't have to work, you would still be able to live the same lifestyle you are living today. Mm-hmm. And now you have that bigger number. It becomes a goal. Okay, so it becomes your goal, and then you do what we call reverse engineering. What do I need to do yearly? What do I need to do maybe 5 years from now? What do I need to do quarterly? What do I need to do monthly? So you now have a goal that you're working towards, because the majority of the young people, they don't have a goal they're working towards. So they get money, they think it's all for spending. And I think you and I can also relate to that. When we started working, nobody had a conversation with us around money. So our level of awareness around money was low. It was, okay, go work, earn the money, spend it. But you didn't realize.
I deserve it.
I worked so hard. Oh, let me buy all the things that I thought I never had before. I never had shoes. I never had these clothes. Now I have it. I never have this life. I mean, like this hairstyle. Oh, my car. Let me go and get this car. So it's an image thing. You're trying to, you know, try and, you know, overcompensate for the things you never had when you're younger. But the thing is, you're going to get to a day when you're older and you look back and realize that you shouldn't have actually spent your money where you spend it.
Because I think what's interesting, this idea of this financial freedom number, because I think in a sense you get your first salary check and you now think you're financially free because you no longer have to ask your parents for money.
Yeah.
You never have to. Now you can spend your money on whatever you want to. Mm. And we've got to replace that thought. That's not financial freedom.
Financial freedom
is when money hits your bank account every month and you're not having to work for it.
Yeah.
That's financial freedom.
That's financial freedom.
Have to start changing perhaps what we think of as financial freedom. Mm. Well, thank you so much. I've had such wonderful insights today. Again, I wish we could all just go back in a time machine and do the things differently. So for the young people who are earning their first paychecks, please listen to this podcast and trust us. We know we've been there. So thank you to Grant and Mavis for joining us today.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Maya.
Please join us for our next episode when we will discuss that next major life change, money and marriage. You've been listening to Smart Money, brought to you by Discovery. Get your money right for your life.
This is CliffCentral.com.